Welcome to the Movie Film Show, featuring the insightful reviews of Mr. Film and Mr. Movie. This week we review Battle Los Angeles and Red Riding Hood. And now here are Mr. Movie and Mr. Film.
Hello, I'm Mr. Film.
And I'm Mr. Movie. And, well, Mr. Film, the aliens are invading again.
Oh, no!
This time we're taking a last stand in Battle Los Angeles, released by Sony Pictures.
When you invade a place for its resources, you wipe out the indigenous population. Right now, we are being colonized.
What the hell is that thing?
Oh my God.
Fall back! Fall back!
How many of you?
Five of us, three kids.
We have civilians coming out!
Can't take them, we got no room!
Wait! Kids!
Formulaic perfectly describes Battle Los Angeles, starring Aaron Eckhart as our kick-butt Marine, who essentially leads a small team of Marines in a battle that takes place in Los Angeles against invading aliens. The movie opens with what at first appears to be meteors hitting the Earth, but it turns out they're really aliens in disguise, landing at almost every coast and every continent, and they embark on wiping out civilization as we know it. The last stand will be in Los Angeles, for no other reason than because the movie makers arbitrarily decided that that's where they'll make their movie. And every character has his own backstory, by the way. Remember, I said formulaic, so we get the guy who's just getting married and the guy who has post-traumatic stress disorder and so on and so forth. And Eckhart has his own baggage to carry. And all this baggage exists so it can be exploited later on during the battle, of course, in order to pull the emotional strings of the audience. But it just doesn't work. There's nothing very deep here, and it just feels like shallow labels and multiculturalism as applied to alien combat. Whatever that means. We do find out why our aliens are here, though. They want our water. I mean, is this right out of a Shyamalan movie or something? The movie tries to explain that while water may exist on other planets, Earth is one of the few where it exists in liquid form. I mean, you've got to be kidding me. If aliens can fly all the way here to our planet and invade us with all kinds of high-tech technology, you'd think they'd figure out how to heat up some ice and melt it. I mean, please! The special effects, while good, do nothing to service the story. And while Eckhart and his team figure out the aliens' weaknesses at one point, their ability to kill the aliens with ease later on in the picture just feels a little too easy. And the climax is uber stupid. And the movie is just way too long. At about an hour and 55 minutes, it really could have been shortened down to about, oh, I don't know, 15 minutes or so. And we really wouldn't have lost anything in the story. That's the biggest problem here. The picture opens with the lingering question, who are these aliens? Then later asks, how do we kill them? That's about the extent of the conflict, and it's kind of interesting. But it's not really worth sticking around for this PG-13 rated picture to find out the answer. Look, I like Aaron Eckhart. He is the only character here with any substance as well, but it does feel like he's only doing this for the paycheck. He should stick to roles in movies that have bigger ideas in them, because he plays in those well. But as for Battle Los Angeles, Mr. Film, I'm giving this a D.
Oh, come on. Now, Mr. Movie, when you get it wrong, you just get it wrong. This is a good, old-fashioned aliens invade the Earth slugfest of
oh
the best
kind. Oh, my God.
Sure, the dramatics are trite, cliched, and unnecessary, since this sort of flick exists for the macho butt-kicking, and it's here that this film delivers. On its own terms, the film is a tour de force of the video game as action film genre, and I really like that it had no pretensions about any deeper meaning other than survival. I do agree with you that the whole water is fuel explanation Shyamalan thing was sort of stupid. District 9, which is a very, very different kind of alien invasion.
And
film
much, much better, more interesting.
Much better, much better. And one of the reasons why it was much better is that it offered few answers about the aliens other than the fact that they were here and they were a big problem. In this ground-pounding situation, I suspect that's all we would have to worry about. They're here, we got to fight them. Aaron Eckhart, I agree with you, is quite good here. As is, I thought the supporting cast of No Nonsense Marines were good. Again, trite, you know, not very deep, but they did a good job. The story is a little of a stretch at times. There's a I'm talking a stretch in terms of it on its own terms.
The whole movie, you mean? Yeah.
And you know the rescue thing. I got a little bored with that. Some of the
fighting, the whole movie. The whole movie is the rescue thing.
But the fighting at the beginning, like when they first encountered the aliens, I thought that was really kind of exciting and scary and pretty cool. But for me, it worked where Independence Day didn't. And the way the tide was turned at the end, setting up, I'm sure, numerous sequels, was a lot more plausible than Independence Day was on any day. It's not a perfect film, but a lot better than what I expected. I had fun, was on the edge of my seat when I needed to be. Rooted for our heroes when I needed to, and I'm looking forward to the inevitable video game this flick will undoubtedly spawn. So I'm giving this a B. I had a good time with this one.
You are insane. This movie was terrible. And I hope there is no sequel. I mean, what are they going to make? Like Battle Paris and then, you know, Battle San Francisco and then Battle San Luis Obispo. I mean,
that's the plan, I think. Yeah.
No, that's not going to happen. I hope.
It's already been a pretty successful picture, so I think we're going to see a sequel. I thought it was fun. I thought the aliens invading the Earth genre is not a new one. We've seen it since the 50s. Most of them are pretty terrible. This one, I thought, again, it isn't deep. It's an action flick. It's butt-kicking at its best. And I think it delivered on its own terms. And you have to look at a picture like this on its own terms. And I think in those terms, it worked.
All right. Well, if you love formula and predictability and triteness, which I guess you do, Mr. Film.
Maybe in this case I do. But I thought it worked. And I think you went in with a bad mood. You probably saw something else out there that you didn't like. But I had a good time with this. And I think there were some vets in the audience, and they were cheering in all the butt kicking parts of the flick. And so I think it delivered what it promised to deliver, and I think it did a good job.
Well, I think I have PTSD after seeing this. So,
well, maybe you did. Maybe you should see somebody about that.
Okay. Maybe the next movie will help us out. What do you think of Red Riding Hood, Mr. Film?
Well, the Big Bad Wolf is just one of the many problems facing Red Riding Hood in the new flick from Twilight director Catherine Hardwicke.
I'd do anything to be with you. It killed again. The wolf.
In daytime, the werewolf returns to its human form.
The wolf is someone in this village. Tell me who it is.
The wolf is coming. You're gonna get what you deserve.
Valerie, aka Red Riding Hood, played by Amanda Seyfried, lives in a never-never village that has been long under the threat of a werewolf. The villagers have struck a sort of peace with the supernatural creature by leaving out prized livestock during each full moon. Apparently, that's the period when werewolves are most active, and it promises to spare the villagers since they're leaving such a tasty snack. Valerie has more pressing problems than any old werewolf, though. She's in love with Peter, sort of a crossover from the musical composition of the Peter and the Wolf, one presumes, but has been promised to Henry, the scion of the wealthy blacksmithing family. But tragedy strikes, and soon a maniacal werewolf-hunting clergyman, played by Gary Oldman, comes to the village to sort out who the werewolf really is. Red is accused of being a witch and later observes how big her grandma's eyes and teeth are, and much mayhem ensues. Now, Red Riding Hood is one of those supernatural fantasy flicks that has all of the right parts, but none of that spiritual glue that can hold it together. I was thinking about those old Hammer movies from the 50s and from Great Britain. They were kind of scary and weird and sexy and exciting. And gothic, and you don't have any of that sort of stuff here. There is no sense of fun, danger, or tension in the plot. As a matter of fact, I actually figured out the secret about halfway through, and I think it was sort of obvious. Siegfried is good as Red, sort of sexy and smart, but she's not enough of either to accomplish what appears to be a sort of feminist reinterpretation of the famous fairy tale. And there are a bunch of plot holes that are really distracting, such as how the townsfolk negotiate with the werewolf in the first place. I never quite could work that out. Film works best, I think, when Oldman shows up as this sort of proto-inquisitor. There's a complexity to his performance. He's a fanatic, but you get what motivates him and sort of sympathize with him a little bit too. And the sense of menace and the paranoia that his presence inspires is much more scary than the werewolf. Now, kudos also needs to go to Julie Christie as Grandma, the smartest one in the bunch, and who, in a real turn on the fairy tale, could have been the true heroine of the story. And I think she was kind of wasted here. The film is weakest when it detours into the Red Peter Henry triangle. Siegfried does her best to appear all swoony when she's with Peter. Shiloh Fernandez is pretty bland as the so-called hero. Max Irons, the son of Jeremy Irons, is a bit better as Henry, but he doesn't have much to work with here. A PG-13 Warner Brothers picture has its suitably dark moments, which it retains from the original telling of the story, but it's a little too late for me. While I wasn't bowled over by the picture, I like the Oldman section of the picture enough to give it a passing grade of a C+.
Mr. Film, you're just off your rocker this week.
I really? Mean,
this is just immature teeny bopper crap. I avoided seeing the Twilight movies, and this was directed by the same director, by the way. And it only validates my decision to avoid those. This is just awful, horribly awful. In fact, it was so awful, it was funny. I mean, you couldn't help but laugh out loud at how bad the writing and the directing and the acting were in many places. This is classic Riff Tracks material, and I'm putting Red Riding Hood in my Netflix queue so I can watch it when Riff Tracks does a riff on it, because it's going to be hilarious. Now, you're right that Gary Oldman is good, but you know what? He's good in anything. And the Hollywood teeny bopper teenage boys in this, however, are that's another story. I mean, they couldn't even think their way out of a paper bag, let alone act their way out of one. And all the scenes they're in are just so bad, you want to cry. They are horrible.
Why did they die?
Horrible. The only decent thing in this movie is the set design and the costumes. I give it kudos for that, and I agree with you about Amanda Seyfried. You know, she's pretty good here, so let's keep the costume designer and the set designers, Gary Oldman and Amanda Seyfried, and move on. But you know what? If you are considering seeing this movie, you know, Mr. Film says it's a C+. I don't know why. So if you have an inkling of following his advice here, I have to say, go see it in the theater with a big crowd, because there is no experience like being in a fully packed movie theater that is rolling in laughter because a movie is so bad. It is a rare opportunity, and for giving me such an opportunity, I'm going to give Red Riding Hood a D+.
All right. Well, you know, I was expecting maybe, you know what maybe I was expecting worse than it actually was. And I'm not saying it was very good. I think that both the young guys were pretty terrible. Max Irons was slightly better.
He was slightly better. I agree with that.
Yeah, he was slightly better. I thought the whole – I mean, I think what they were trying to do is this weird feminist – and not to say – you know, we're feminist in terms of they're trying to turn the whole thing on its ear kind of thing. And they had opportunities to do that, but they really – or make it really dark and twisted, which at the end I suspect there were probably an original version of the script that was pretty dark and twisted. And I think if they had gone the more dark and twisted side of things, like say the film Cat People from the early 80s, if they had gone that route, you would have had probably still kind of a terrible picture, but at least it would have been interesting terrible instead of just hilarious terrible. You're right. Gary Oldman, I mean, the guy could read the phone book. It would be interesting. Julie Christie's here. Her handful of scenes are pretty good.
Yeah.
There are a couple of good moments.
I don't know about that.
But any time when the love triangle business was going on, I just forget it. And the werewolf was boring.
Yeah. And someone needs to tell Amanda Seyfried that werewolf is pronounced werewolf, not woof. You know, this felt a lot like a, you know, Clue or something, like playing a game of Clue that, you know, well, it could be this person. Then it's, and then they try to make it obvious that it's this character. And the next scene, they try to make it obvious that somebody else is the werewolf. And then somebody else is the werewolf. And it's just like, give me a break, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, they kind of just needed to, what they needed to do is just kind of just get that whole mystery business out of the way. Go dark and twisted, and it would have been at least a fairly not horrible picture.
All right. Well, I'm not sure about that, but I'll take your word for it.
All right.
All right.
Always hope.
All right. I think that's all we have for this week, Mr. Film.
All right. I think you're right.
Well, as always, you can visit our website at www.moviefilmshow.com. If you have a comment or question, you can send us an email at mail@moviefilmshow.com. And we also have a voice line now, Mr. Film.
All right.
People can call and leave us a voice message, and if we get any good ones, we'll play them on the air. And the number for that is 818-581-2010. Mr. Film?
Yes.
Isn't that cool?
That's awesome. I'm looking forward to it, and I think that I'd be interested to hear some feedback as to why our listeners think Battle LA is not as horrible as you think it is.
Okay. All right, Mr. Film. I'll see you next show.
I'll see you next show, Mr. Movie.
All right.
Okay. But it's a little too late.
You are insane. This movie was terrible. They want our water.
And the werewolf was boring.
I mean, is this right out of a Shyamalan movie or something?
I never quite could work that out. Apparently, that's the period when werewolves are most active.
This is just immature teeny bopper crap.
Oh, come on. Now, Mr. Movie, when you get it wrong, you just get it wrong. The story is a little of a stretch at times. I'm talking a stretch in terms of it on its own terms.
The whole movie, you mean, yeah. Woof.